Hi, everybody. Thanks very much for checking out Telich Talks. And this week we're talking about Big Joe Thomas, the Hall of Fame offensive tackle of the Cleveland Browns, who was inducted in 2023. He had a phenomenal career with the Browns, 10 straight seasons. He made the Pro Bowl, 10,363 consecutive snaps he played until an injury forced him out of a game in his 11th season, and it actually forced him into retirement. There's a book out now called Joe Thomas, Not Your Average Joe, coming to you from Gray and Company Publishers in Cleveland, Ohio, and written by Mark Bona and Dan Murphy. Now, Mark is an award-winning features writer for Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer, and Dan Murphy is the director of football communications for the Browns. He has been with the team since, well, pretty much he and Joe Thomas go back way, way, way back into their careers. He started with the Browns in 2008. Great conversations with both. Mark Bona is first up, and then we will talk to Dan Murphy. Hope you enjoy our conversation about the great Joe Thomas and this new book, Joe Thomas, Not Your Average Joe. Great to talk with you, Mark. And I'm really curious how this whole project kind of got started in the first place. Why a book on Joe Thomas, and how did you come to collaborate with both Dan Murphy and the folks over at Gray?
Well, it was pretty interesting, John, because several years ago, I was covering a Greater Cleveland Food Bank charity event, and Joe was there, and it was multimedia for me, so I had to be interviewed on the air, and I was writing a story and taking photos. I had never met Joe before, and the only thing at the time that I really knew about Joe was how good of a football player he was. Having not interviewed him before, I did not know about his sense of humor. So Joe is, of course, 6'8", and I'm not. And I was holding the microphone up, and I very seriously, not going for a gag, I asked him, Joe, we're at this food bank event, and, you know, we're surrounded by food. What did you grow up with? And I know you grew up in Wisconsin. What did you grow up eating? How were things like for you? And with a straight face, he answered me and said, well, Mark, like a lot of young boys growing up in Wisconsin, I ate a lot of cheese curds and drank a lot of beer. And I thought, I got one. John, you've interviewed a lot of people, famous and not so famous. So you understand when you get somebody who's well-known and you get them, you find a personality, you find a passion, even in addition to what they're known for, that's golden. So I pocketed that one away. That was the first part. The second part was, several years later, I interviewed Joe because he collaborated with Great Lakes Brewing Company on a beer that is still being made now, 73 Kolsch, obviously for his jersey number, an absolutely fantastic beer. Well, it turns out when people lend their names to a beer, they often just kind of phone it in. Not in this case. Joe has an insatiable appetite for learning. He always has, dating back to when he was in college, when he got serious about his studies. And Great Lakes, the folks at Great Lakes absolutely loved it. They were geeking out on it because they found a guy who was really interested in the product. Joe was asking all these questions, and it went really well. And I interviewed him about that, and that was the second interview. So as time went on, John, I really thought I knew, I don't know much, but one thing I knew was I was willing to bet he was a first ballot Hall of Famer the day he retired. And I reached out to him a while later, and I said, Joe, I have an idea for a kid's book. And he wasn't interested. I said, fine. A while later, I went back at him, and I said, Joe, I really think you'd be a good subject for a book, whether it's a biography or autobiography. I'm very open. Joe reached out to his reps, and we went back and forth, and he was really trying to feel out the process, how much time it would take. And I'll never forget this, but in the course of the interview, I was on the phone. It was a three-way call. I've got his rep in New York. I'm here in my home in Akron, and Joe is in Wisconsin at his son's flag football game. And we're having this discussion, and he said, Mark, you know, I'd be interested in this as a biography, but I have to ask, do you know Dan Murphy of the Browns? I said, well, I've emailed with Dan for years, but we've never met. And he said he and I started at the Browns the same year, and he's a great guy. We became good buddies, and you may want to consider collaborating with him. And I'll never forget, John, I said, well, I usually work alone, but I ended up meeting with Dan. We had lunch. I had a really good vibe about him and the project. We decided to team up, and it was a natural fit. So I covered everything in Joe's life from the time he was born through the draft, and then Dan took it from there. And we
Okay.
kind of collaborated on a really, what I think is a unique, it's half biography, half autobiography. So that's how the whole project came about.
Well, it was really fun to read it because you guys really did kind of cover all the bases. How you went back to his youth and just the collection of pictures as well. I'm sure that was both you, Murph, and the folks at Gray's and obviously Joe himself and the family. Dealing with the folks, I mean, they're just, true blue American family, and as genuine as it comes, and that's why Joe turned out to be the kind of guy that he is. What was the experience for you just kind of connecting with the folks and getting some of those early days of Big Joe?
It was absolutely fantastic. I ended up that his parents graciously had just come back from a trip visiting Joe, and they were back at their home in Brookfield where he grew up. And I had a lot of appointments in Brookfield. I spent about 4 days there, 4 or 5 days, interviewing a ton of people, going to his high school. And his parents graciously were just came back from this trip, and they just walked in the door. They had me in their living room for several hours. They were absolutely wonderful. I almost wish this was an audiobook with Joe's mother reading it, because she was so animated and had such a great voice. You could tell Joe gets a lot of his just research mind from his father, and I heard all these great anecdotes, and that was just a real kick, interviewing a lot of the people there. It was great. And you're right, they're very down to earth people. I had at least two of his friends from high school, I want to say a basketball player and maybe a football player, and both of them told me, Mark, I watched Joe in post game interviews, and they both used the same term. They said, what you see is what you get. And it became very clear to me, Joe is very serious about two things in his life. He's very serious about his family, and he was very serious about his career. But Joe's a goofball. I mean, Joe's a funny guy, and he's willing to enjoy life, and he goes about things in a very happy-go-lucky way. And that really came across in the interviews as well as talking to Joe.
Joe is really a disarming kind of a guy, and puts you at ease rather obviously easily, and is as thoroughly professional as it comes. And as a kid, you probably from the interviews and talking to buddies and what have you, got the little pieces and parts of the development of that person who would be so steadfast in what he wanted to do, but yet would have open part of his personality to just really. He almost has that wonderment of it all kind of a personality. At least that's my impression of Big Joe.
Yeah, that's very well put. And disarming is a perfect word, John. He really does have that as a personality trait. It was interesting talking to various people about him, and it was more than just, I mean, he had at a very young age, he became very close friends with three other guys, and they were thick as thieves. They stayed that way through their careers. They endured tragedy. They endured successes. They've all grown up. They're godparents to each other's children. And that basis of friendship, as well as his strong family life, I think really rooted him and grounded him at a young age. And that's admirable in my mind. I mean, a lot of us. I have a lot of friends, but I moved around a lot. I can't say that I had friends from when I was a kid. Some people can and some people can't. I thought that was pretty neat. And just learning more and more about him, both athletically as well as personally, was pretty interesting. He's a fascinating guy.
It really was, and it was and is obviously. And the cool thing too that we first really came to know Big Joe about was we all knew that he was going to be drafted and knew it would be super high, and we knew of his
the awards he won in college and his greatness as a college football player. And also, as you'll read in the book, how phenomenal he was in the weight events in track and field, to the point where he could even compete on that level and also play football. That just shows you a lot right there. But the cool part was, you know, the fishing with Dad on draft day. What's Dad's impression of the day? And just that was pretty much Joe Thomas in a nutshell. Going for the big city lights and all the glitz and glamour of being a pro football player, just fishing with pops and friends.
Yeah, that his father is very level-headed, even keeled, and he had told me in Wisconsin the law was years ago, if I understand this right, you would get I may have it wrong, but you would get a license if you can hold a pole. So Joe was out fishing when he was 3 years old. So his father said, yeah, I'd give him a couple Ninja Turtles in the boat and give him an extra blanket, and we'd be out there early. And that obviously is a bonding moment and that Joe came to just absolutely love and cherish. And he knew that those days were going to end with the draft. So it was important to him. It was important to his dad. And Joe had, this was pretty interesting, actually. I mean, we all know that famous story. And I opened the book with that, with, you know, he's on the lake. He decided to go fishing instead of going to New York. That is who Joe was. He's a very down-to-earth guy. But behind the scenes, there was a lot of push and pull going on. His agent, who was Joe thinks very highly of, and his parents like, yep. Joe went to him and says, listen, you know, here's Joe at 21, 22. He said, would you mind if I did not go to New York? And he said, I'll back you up, Joe. And he did. But behind the scenes, there was a lot of pressure. Gil Brandt from the league was really, really putting the pressure on Joe. And Joe didn't like that, left a bad taste in his mouth. And I think he kept it as classy as he could, but I don't blame him. He dug in his heels on this and decided not to go. And it just wasn't his scene. So I mean, that alone was an interesting story. But as you know, John, I mean, you've been here a long time. That's what Clevelanders like. They like that lunch pail. They like you showing up at work and doing your job. And that's what Joe was all about.
He really was. And the 10,363, I mean, I can recite that number just, you know, at the drop of a hat. And it became a thing as the career went on. So many things had to come into play for that to happen, to get it to the point where he went all the way through those 10 years and then up to the day that he was injured. That speaks just volumes about the guy that, I mean, he did have the one story about he injured his knee severely enough that had that happened in, let's say, week six, we might not be talking about the streak, you know, it to be 10,363. Just remarkable the endurance that he showed. And the bone density, tell our listeners that aspect of this guy. This guy really wasn't made on this planet, it seems like.
Yeah, Joe, when they tested bone density, he tested off the charts, has just this really, really high number of thick bones, basically. And what that does is, I mean, he doesn't break bones. And that was a huge, huge help there. The other thing about that I thought was fascinating, I had a great interview with Evan Moore, who played a couple seasons with the Browns, buddy of Joe, lives out west. He had told me that on, I want to say it was on Fridays, the workout that that a lot of NFL players does, and Evan was great because he was explaining a lot of behind the scenes stuff to me. And he said, you know, on Fridays we had a lighter workout because you're going to go into a weekend, you want to rest up a little bit. So guys would work, we had various stations, weight stations and things. It was a lighter day. A lot of guys would lift weights, they would do work on their biceps, and we jokingly called it TV arms because you want to look good on Sunday. Joe would not do that. Joe didn't care. Joe would make fun of everybody else doing this. He goes, you guys want to look good with your TV arms? Fine. You know what keeps me playing on Sundays? Stretching. So Joe was off doing something very unglamorous. He was stretching. And that alone, that in and of itself, one of the reasons it kept him playing for so long.
What was really cool, too, about the book was that, you know, you had the first person narrative. So obviously you had his blessing. And because he wanted to bring Murph into this, and And we, of course, will talk to Murph in this episode as well. But you also had the guys he played with. And I thought that was really cool. How did that come about? And boy, they gave us some cool insights about what makes Joe Joe. And it's no secret that some of those guys and he were similar in the ways that they were incredibly dogged and steadfast and determined in their preparation to be the best, like Alex Mack. And they were all just tough guys. I mean, look at Joel Bitonio, who's an All-Pro, and the erudite Mitchell Schwartz, who was on the right side, right tackle. It was a cool collection, but I guess my point, long meandering way of saying it, is it's great that we heard from them in the book. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was a Dan thing. Dan had been collecting notes on Thomas for a long time, and he reached out to a lot of those guys. I reached out to some for various points of my gotcha. Interviews, but that was a neat thing. And those guys, they obviously spoke highly of Joe, but you know, you're right. I mean, it takes people look at athletes and maybe some entertainers and other things as, wow, this is really cool, but what they don't see is what's going on in private. And that's the work, the preparation, the practice, the drills and the drills and the drills. And those guys really wanted to get better. And they worked as a team. They are a unit and they had to play that way. So yeah, that was a neat perspective from some of his teammates over the years.
I may also touch upon this when I talk to Dan, but there's just a very admirable side to Joe Thomas. The aspect that he it wasn't his doing, but he was saddled with being on these teams that just, you know, they're changing coaches every year. And hello, my name is so-and-so, I'm your quarterback of the moment. And I just give him so much credit that he endured all of that. You know, it'd be like going to work in an office where everybody just had a sour, you know, attitude, and the company was one of the worst and it's being sold left and right. How did he do that? How did an individual such as that, as Joe Thomas, be so forthright in his determination to continue in such a very difficult atmosphere year in and year out?
Yeah, I think the answer to that's a good question, because I think there's an intestinal fortitude, which has now become a cliche, but I think Joe had it. He had a will to win, and it is extraordinarily frustrating. I think that frustration boiled up, but I think Joe, for lack of a better term, kept that under control. And a great little short anecdote was, at one point, and I cannot remember if this was to his wife or to his mother or both, it was to his mother, because I remember his mom telling me this. She said Joe was on the phone and he was crying. He was crying because he said, "I just played a perfect game." Now, that wasn't ego talking. That was Joe knowing his craft and knowing what it took to do his job. And he played a perfect game. No holding penalties. He protected the quarterback and he opened the holes. He did what he had to do, and he ran where he was supposed to run. He played perfectly, and the Browns got their teeth kicked in yet again. So that frustration, you're right. I mean, that was a good analogy about going into work in a really sour, bad environment, toxic environment. I don't, you know, other than that, I can't say how we did it. I don't know how I would have done it. I think that's a reason why a lot of guys look elsewhere as free agents when they want to go to a winning team.
Yeah, and he did tell that story, humorous and somewhat descriptive, about when Peyton Manning, you know, wanted him to go to the Broncos, and how he, you know, and Peyton even suggested he do something that wasn't real cool to the, you know, to the general manager. And we won't get into it in this interview, but suffice to say, Joe didn't do that. And Joe stayed a Cleveland Brown. We're really happy that he did. Just a cool guy, great guy. I always was impressed by his professionalism and how great he was towards us in the media. I wasn't there every day. I covered the Cavs and high school football and so many other sports along with the Browns, but boy, the Browns are the beat in Cleveland, and they are the team to know. And Joe was, you know, that shining star along with Josh Cribbs in the early aughts or noughts or whatever we call that period of the 2000s. And then there was Joe, you know, the beacon of light. and he did things his way. I remember he, even to the point of like the pants he wore, he wasn't one of those guys that had the pants tight. He had them loose because it made perfect sense. Why would you want anything restricting even microscopically one thousandth percent of your movement. He said, I needed all the movement I could get because I'm going up against all these incredible pass rushers, James Harrison, to, you know, right off the bat, and so on and so forth. I thought that was kind of cool that he thought that way.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of a maverick streak to him, just a little bit. It was funny. He was participating in the roundtable of Hall of Famers during induction week. And I was absolutely fascinated by that because he got into some very serious, specific football stuff. He talked so wonderfully about Dwight Freeney, who just got in and was getting into that. But I'm bringing it up now because he showed up barefoot. I think he was wearing cargo shorts, and he shows up barefoot as he walks on stage. He was having fun. You know, he did endear himself in so many ways to people. And you're right, he had a great rep with the media. You know that behind the scenes, we hear rumors about people. I'm not a beat writer for any of the teams, but I hear things. And, you know, I talk to our guys sometimes. We never heard anything on Joe, not a parking ticket, you know? So he, as his teammate said, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, very true. And ahead of the curve, I think in many ways, and I'll also speak a little bit about this with Dan Murphy, because when he and Hawk came together to do that podcast, and this was right before the pandemic, if I recall. And when they did, you know, that's pre Kelsey brothers, that's pre, you know, Club Shay Shay, whatever you want, athletes doing podcasts. I thought that was admirable and pretty cool that both Andrew Hawkins and Joe Thomas combined together. I think this would have been Myles Garrett's first year, if I recall, because I think he did have Myles on the podcast in 2017 or so. But I thought that was kind of cool. And the Joe Thomas was ahead of the curve in terms of doing those podcasts. And now the whole world knows about, you know, Jason Kelsey and Travis Kelsey and Taylor and all this sort of stuff. But Joe and Hawk were ahead of the curve, kind of trailblazing in some ways, Mark.
Yeah, I think so. Joe is, you know, the last chapter of my section of the biographical part is about all of the off the field type of things that Joe is interested in, what he's invested in, things like that. He's got a lot of interest, you know, and he's got a full-time job with his wife, Annie, for basically dealing with four kids growing up. And he's got so much. And then on the field, of course, he was so great for such a long time. I mean, he was so dominant at Wisconsin. And he played, you know, half the positions on the field in high school. And, you know, it's fascinating. You mentioned his track and field prowess. He was unbelievable. I had a lot of people, and I actually did some research to quantify this, but a lot of people said he could have been a gold medalist or a medal winner. Yeah. In shot put. And I think the numbers bear that out. If he had had a little bit more time to train, he could have done that. He was an exceptional basketball player. So, you know, and you're right. His media was trailblazing. The podcast is a good example. But fun guy and just phenomenal, really amazing.
Well, Mark, I really appreciate you kind of shedding a little bit of light on the whole process of writing this book. And I encourage our listeners to check out the book on Joe Thomas. It's with the great publishers, and kudos to you and Dan Murphy for a real cool, nice job of putting this book together. It's a fun read if you're a Browns fan, and not necessarily just because if you're a Browns fan or you're an NFL fan, you love the pro football. This is one of the greatest players to ever play the game. He wouldn't say that. He'd be making jokes about himself. But he is. And you guys really depict him absolutely beautifully. So kudos to you and best wishes as you move forward. But best wishes on the proceeds and the sales of this book. Good luck to you, my man.
And thanks so much, John. Really appreciate it.
So excited to bring Dan Murphy into the fold here. Speaking with Mark Bona about the collaborative process. How did that work for you? Certainly, I would imagine the best part is that you had a great relationship and still do to this day with Joe Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. That relationship grew really strong over the years. I'm now entering my 17th year with the Cleveland Browns. And I came in shortly after Joe was with the team. I wasn't there his rookie year, but I came in the next year. So we spent almost his whole career together. And I mean, as you know, the team didn't have the success we always wanted. And that led to changes that, I mean, whenever you lose, that leads to new personnel, new coaching staff, which mm-hmm. leads to new players. And that's just, that's the nature of the NFL, especially when your team's not performing well. But, you know, someone like Joe, who's obviously a Hall of Fame caliber player, is going to stay on the team. So, I mean, after a couple of years, I remember Joe and I kind of looking around and be like, oh, we're kind of the only familiar faces here. Like a lot of new people coming in, going. So, yeah, we overlapped. We saw a lot of coaches together, a lot of different players, and we kind of just bonded. We have similar personalities and just got along really well. And I mean, that's just Joe, though. Everybody gets along with Joe. He's just got a great personality. He makes you feel, you know, like you're part of the family, you know, like even people he doesn't know, just watching him interact with people, like he just has a way to make you feel good about yourself. And I hope that comes through like in the book, because, you know, there's a lot of chapters in Joe's words and about, you know, working hard and being a good teammate and stuff like that. And those just really show who he is.
Yeah, they really do. In fact, I wanted to talk a bit about that. You got him to first person. You got him to, and you reached out, I'm sure, to his offensive line teammates that he spoke the world of, and then they conversely came right back at him. And then I thought it was really great, Joe, talking about all the quarterbacks. What was that process like?
That's probably my favorite chapter of the book. Yeah, it's Joe's words, and, you know, I helped with that. And Joe was here during training camp one year, and, you know, the book was kind of, the project was underway. So I asked, like, hey, do you have a, you know, maybe an hour or 2 hours to kind of come to my office at the end of the day? Let's just, you know, I had that idea. Like, let's do a quarterback chapter. You know, that's what Browns fans love. They love talking quarterbacks. Everybody talks about the jersey. Everybody has seen it. So when I said it to him, I was like, hey, let's talk quarterbacks. And then he says it in the book too. Like, are we talking just starting quarterbacks, or are we talking other guys like Terrell Pryor or Josh Cribbs that lined up and took snaps at quarterback? So we went through the process, looked up, you know, I mean, he can name most of them off the top of his head, but we made sure we didn't miss anybody. And he goes through and gives a little blurb, a little paragraph, a little story, a tidbit about every single quarterback that was under center while he was here.
Yeah, it was really fun to read. And boy, some of those names, Dan, I mean, obviously we lived it. We saw it being in Berea quite a bit, but just some of those names, Gradkowski, was it Grabowski or Gradkowski? I can't remember.
Bruce Gradkowski, yeah.
Yeah, it was. Tell our listeners about that situation.
Yeah, he was signed for, that was actually my first season with the team. It was 2008.
Okay.
And the starting quarterbacks at the time that year were Brady Quinn, Derek Anderson. They were both hurt at that point. The third string quarterback was Ken Dorsey, who's now the Browns offensive coordinator. Yeah. He got hurt, that I think the second to last game. And they needed a quarterback for that last week. And Bruce was brought in and was made the starter pretty much almost right away. Maybe he had a week in between, but like was brought in and kind of thrown to the wolves that last week. And he was from Pittsburgh. And I remember Joe's story about him was, you know, he only overlapped them for a little bit, but his story was he was from Pittsburgh. His whole family was from Pittsburgh, and we were playing in Pittsburgh. And so Bruce had all the offensive linemen over to his mom's house, and they cooked this big Italian dinner the night before. And he just talked about how great it was and just a family feel and having everybody together. And it was kind of a neat story.
It really was. So why do you think Joe resonated so well with Browns fans? What was it about him? We know he was a Hall of Fame football player. We saw that this past summer. But why do you think Joe really clicked with Cleveland? Is clicking with Cleveland?
Because he is just a Midwestern guy. I think the moment the NFL draft, I think everybody knows that story about how he skipped the NFL draft and he was one of the first people to ever do it. And he goes into it in the book about how the NFL kind of pushed back and said, hey, this is not a good look for you. You need to be there. Teams might not think you're a team player if you don't show up. And, you know, he stood by his values and his morals of being with his dad and knowing that he was going to be drafted and move somewhere across country, not knowing at that point where, and be away from his family. So he wanted to take one of these last weekends he had to spend with his dad. And I believe his future father-in-law came on the boat too, and they went out fishing. And, you know, that's what Joe did growing up. They always went out fishing with his family. And I think just the fact that he skipped at the time the draft was in New York, kind of skipping that glitz and glamour of New York and, you know, the flashy lights. And that's not Cleveland. That's not Clevelanders. You know, everybody here is, you know, down to earth, hardworking. And I think people, when we ended up drafting him with that third pick, it really resonated with Browns fans. Like, okay, this guy, he's a lineman. He's a hard worker. He cares about just he cares about family, cares about hard work. He doesn't care about, you know, going to New York and, you know, making a deal with a, you know, some sort of sponsor, you know, that kind of thing. Like, that's not stuff that was important to him. What was important to him was spending time with family the last he could, last time he had an opportunity to.
I really also enjoyed the chapter of his professional life where he got into podcasting, and you played a big part in that, Dan. You know, they joked about you a lot, but he and Andrew Hawkins, the Tomahawk Pod. How did that come about? Was that not 2017? I thought I remember him interviewing Miles, who was a rookie. Was that your first year for that thing?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, either that year or maybe it was Baker's rookie year. One of those years. I remember being at the draft with the show, and Baker was on before he was drafted by the Browns. Okay. We were at the Super Bowl for Radio Row, and Baker Mayfield was on, being a high prospect, had a lot of people coming through and doing interviews. That came up because him and Hawk, at that point, towards the end of their careers, they're the elder statesmen on the team. They're two guys that are married, that have kids. They're, you know, listen to maybe different music genres than the younger folks. You know, they got different tastes, different stages of their life, to be honest. And so those two really bonded together about, you know, that, you know, where other guys might be worried about going out and having fun, and, you know, they were worried about going home and taking care of the kids. Who's, you know, hey, what are we having for dinner tonight? You know, that kind of stuff. So those two formed a really good relationship, and they're both from different backgrounds. And that's what made the show so great, where, like, you kind of get, but, you know, both sides of the coin, hearing them talk about their experiences and stuff growing up.
Well, the cool thing was how they meshed was not only, you know, Joe was known by everybody. Joe was prohibitive, you know, top five draft pick before he got picked. He got picked third overall. He was known, you know, he won the Outland Award. He won, you know, he was known. And Hawk just had to scramble for everything he got, right?
Exactly. I love Andrew Hawkins' story. For those who don't know, he, you know, I think tried out for the NFL and then didn't sign with a team. He just had a tryout and didn't make it. And then he ended up getting on, I think it was Michael Irvin's reality TV show.
Yeah.
And he didn't win. It was where the winner got a contract with the Cowboys. He ended up taking runner up, but being on that show got him enough exposure to get signed in the CFL, where he won two Grey Cups, which is their Super Bowl, and played really well, was, you know, really great player. And then that led to him eventually getting signed by the Bengals and having a great career there, and then getting signed by us in free agency and having a good career for the Browns too. It's just a remarkable story of just determination and kind of knowing your value and knowing that you're good enough and not giving up on your dreams.
Yeah, and he's really blown up, you know, being a guy on ESPN now. He's got his own business ventures, really an imaginative personality and a fun guy to be around. He was cool to cover, as was Joe, obviously. Take us back to just the mechanics or the day-to-day deal of handling, because of your position with the Browns, individuals like Joe, the needs of the media, the needs of the team, and how you walk the line in between all of the people pulling at him, wanting his attention or his time, or his media and stuff.
Yeah, especially with Joe, as you know, like, he was in high demand, you know, probably the biggest star on the team. I mean, it was a Hall of Famer, but it's different because he's the left tackle. And in most other cities, he might not have been as big a star as he was here, but, you know, Clevelanders love those people that work hard and really adopted Joe. And so working with Joe, he was great. He, you know, his personality showed in all of his interviews, and that's why people loved him. So working with him, he won our media good guy award, I think two or three times, the first guy to ever win it multiple times. And like I said, just, he's just got a great personality and just really works well with people.
Yeah, he was really good to the media and continues to be just a first-class individual. So the way you guys put this book together, was it mostly Mark took the early years and then you kind of picked up the ball from you and Joe's relationship starting? And is that how things kind of went with this?
Yeah, exactly. For the most part, we all helped here and there, but for the most part, that's accurate. And it just made more sense for me because I overlapped all that time with Joe. I knew a lot of those stories. I knew those quarterbacks that he, you know, wrote the chapters about. And so I could, you know, kind of, oh, I remember, hey, remember when this happened? Hey, remember when that happened? Or, hey, this might be a good thing to throw in the book. kind of reminding him of different stories or different things that had happened. And this was something that when he was still playing, he had brought to my attention. He said, you know, hey, there's talk that maybe I'll make the Hall of Fame someday. At that point, he was already going to be a lock, but yeah. You know, he is a humble guy. And he was just like, you know, at that point he had, I think, three of his four kids at that point. And he said, you know, I'd love to have, you know, something where that, you know, my kids don't want to hear my stories. When I get old, they're not going to want to hear dad talking about like, oh, I used to do this, I used to do that. He's like, but someday they might want to read my story and know what happened. He was like, you know, would you have any interest in helping put together a book for me? And this was while he was still playing. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So from that point on, I was kind of jotting down ideas, different notes, different thoughts. And then he retired. And I mean, honestly, I kind of forgot about it. And then a couple years later, he reached back out. I was like, hey, you know, I was in contact with Mark and, you know, he's showing interest in, you know, writing a book on me. And I know that's something you and I had talked about. How about we set up a meeting of the two of you? You guys get together and maybe you guys write it together, you know, see what's possible. And I was like, sure. So met with Mark and we determined that was probably the best way. And I think that part of that story shows like Joe just being a family man, you know, like he wanted to do this just for his kids. So like, you know, when I'm an old grandpa, no one's going to want to hear my stories, but maybe someday they'll grow up and they'll actually want to read about me. So,
That's cool that he had that It's cool that he had that motivation, Dan, to say, you know, hey, nobody's going to hear me, because he's always been self-deprecating. And that's very, a very likable aspect of the legend, as it were, of Big Joe Thomas. This kind of worked out cool for you in the sense that your roots, your DNA partly has been in the reporting / editor phase because of your father's history as being a longtime and super respected, you know, sports editor, writer. How did that come about for you just growing up and gravitating towards the PR/ media relations side versus what your pops was doing?
Yeah, so he worked at the News Herald in Lake County for at least 30 years. So growing up, he was the sports editor. So as you know, like working at sports, you know, maybe not the Browns per se, but like covering the Guardians or covering the Cavs, they got late nights, you know, late deadlines. You're trying to get the newspaper done in time. Back in the day, there was no internet to really put the story up. So I grew up going to Cavs and Indians and Browns games with him. I have a picture of me at training camp in like 1993 here at the facility here in Berea. So I just grew up with sports, you know, that's what it was, you know? So going with him back to the newspaper as he's writing his story or writing the game recap, those kind of things. And I played football in college. And my freshman year, our sports information director, which is, you know, sports PR communications, the realm I'm in now. And at that point, I didn't really know much about it. He came and spoke to, I was in a sports journalism class. And at that point I thought, hey, I'm going to be a sports writer like my dad. And the guy came in and his name is Jason Tirada. He came in and said, hey, we're always looking for student help. This is what we do. We keep the stats. We write the media guide bios. We do the stories on the website. And I thought that's awesome. That's what I want to do. Like, I want to write stories. So I spoke to him after class and I said, I would love to help out. So I ended up working all 4 years in the student office at Hiram College when I wasn't playing football. So I worked in the spring and the fall and the winter for all those sports. And it got me the experience working on that kind of more the PR side.
Yeah.
And then I got a chance to work at Eastern Michigan University and get my master's degree in sport management, where I worked in the sports information office there as well. And then that ended up leading me here to the Browns in 2008. And I mean, they haven't kicked me out since, so.
Yeah, they still got you there and you're still having a great time with them. And there's been so many roller coasters to ride with that team. One of the highest points, I would imagine, would have been last summer of 2023 in Canton, Ohio, when Joe goes into the Hall of Fame. Give us a sense of your emotions that weekend as one of your good friends goes to the mountaintop, as it were.
Yeah, it was so awesome being a part of all of that. Joe had me actually help him write his speech for that as well. So that was just a huge honor on my part, just to be a part of, you know, not a lot of people can say they helped write a Hall of Fame speech.
Very
and
cool.
Joe knocked it out of the park. He did a great job. I got to bring my family. My wife and kids were with me. And, you know, we drove and stayed down at Canton and got to go to some of the festivities there. And, you know, Joe did a big party. It was a lot of fun. And it was just really cool. During the ceremony, I was in a suite with a lot of the Browns, you know, personnel, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, and just enjoying that moment of watching, you know, Joe being the first Hall of Famer since 99 for the Browns to come back and being in Cleveland, having all those Browns fans there in Canton. It had a different element to it. And it was just so awesome to watch.
It sure was. And so what was it like crafting this speech? Were there a lot of revisions, or did you guys just kind of, you know, in sync, as it were, put this thing together?
Yeah, we were pretty in sync. I actually helped him write his retirement press conference as well. And so a lot of those thank yous are recycled for the most part. But, you know, you don't want to say the exact same thing you said 5 years ago when you retired. And you're looking to, you know, and, you know, like you said, Joe's self-deprecating. So, you know, he's going to make jokes about the quarterbacks, and he's going to make jokes about being a fat offensive lineman. And so you're looking for ways to incorporate those and show his personality. And that's what he did. He was able to do that while also, you know, being humbled and being honored and showing his respect for the organization and his place in history.
What was your feeling being around that offensive line that Joe was a part of with Alex Mack back in the day, the young kid of the time, Joel Bitonio, Mitchell Schwartz, who was an All-Pro when he went to the Chiefs, John Greco, the least talked about guy, but yet a rock. That was really an outstanding offensive line.
Right. That was, I believe it was 2014, when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator here that year. And if you go back and look, I mean, Joe made 10 Pro Bowls. Joel has made, I think, 5 or 6 at this point now and still counting. Mitchell Schwartz, I mean, was several time All-Pro, made 1 Super Bowls with the Chiefs. Alex Mack, you know, Pro Bowls, All-Pros, played in the Super Bowl with the Falcons. I mean, these guys are some of the best at their position of all time, and they overlap together. And, you know, at that point, Joel was a rookie, so you didn't know he's going to turn out to be, you know, one of the best guards in Browns history.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that, like, Joe's influence on those guys. So in the book, there's a chapter where they kind of reflect back to Joe. Yeah. Like, they each, in their own words, kind of talk about Joe and the influence he had on them. And, you know, Joel, who this past year, his snap streak came to an end, and he talked about how that was because of Joe. Like, he played because of Joe. He's watched Joe tough through all these injuries that, you know, most people might have shut it down, especially at the end of the year when the team's out of it. You're like, I'm not going to risk further injury by keep playing. And that's just what you did, because he had that example when he first came in the league, right next to him when he was left guard, Joe was left tackle. He saw it like, hey, this guy's beat up, but he's still going there and giving his all and being there for his teammates because he still can and he wants to. So you can see that resonate with somebody like Joel. And that's why somebody like Joel now is so beloved by Browns fans, because he has those qualities and adapted those qualities that made Joe so beloved by Browns fans.
Yeah, it sure seems like Bitonio has taken over the reins, as it were, and immense respect for him from me and from everybody that has covered the team or watched the team. He's just a phenomenal NFL offensive lineman and keeps playing at this rate. You know, we could be in that conversation down the road.
Exactly.
So much fun. Well, you guys wrote a great book. And if you're a Browns fan, I highly recommend you picking it up. Dan, it's a pleasure talking to you about Joe Thomas, about your career in snippets. Is there another book in the works? Are you
nothing in the works right now.
All right, we'll keep it at that. Well, all the best to you. Good luck to the Browns next season. It's always been a pleasure being around you, as I've been in the business for a bazillion years. You as well. And much success with this book going forward to you, Dan.
All right, thank you. Really appreciate it, John.
Thanks very much to both guys for opening up about the whole process of putting this book together. And if you are a Browns fan, this is something you will want to pick up. Joe Thomas, not your average Joe. And if you enjoy the podcast, liking and or subscribing or sharing the episode would certainly help me as I battle the algorithm police here on these podcast apps. Thanks for listening, gang, and we'll see you the next time around, right here on Telich Talks.